Linda Christians is the former president of the American Holistic Nurses Association and an advanced certified holistic nurse. She is currently an associate professor at the University of Utah College of Nursing, where she teaches health promotion and global health. She was the dean of nursing at Fortis College in Salt Lake City. She taught nursing at Brigham Young University for 10 years and is the former host of the Glenda the Good Nurse Talk radio show. Dr. Christians received her baccalaureate and master's degrees in nursing from the University of Utah and her PhD in nursing from the Oregon Health and Science University. She is the mother of four, grandmother of 11, and lives in West Jordan, Utah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the great introduction, and thanks for being here. It's Black Friday. Have you been shopping all day? Anybody been shopping all day? Okay. Well, welcome. Take a break. I started coming to the IHANS meeting about 5 years ago because Penny back there told me about it, and my husband was very interested in it, and we had a friend who was not long in this life, and he wanted to go, and so we came fairly often for a while, and then we sort of came and went, and I never thought I would have a near-death experience, so hopefully just because you come tonight doesn't mean you're going to have one, but we'll see what happens. In the spring of 2014, I had a great life. I was the dean of College of Nursing at Fortis College. I had my own radio talk show, met some people from all over the world. I was a former president of the American Holistic Nurses Association. What a life. And professionally. No, personally, it was great, too. I just was driving home from work one day, had a funny memory come up. It's very difficult to describe. Just a funny memory that just zapped me, and I was just driving. I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? And it seemed like a whole episode of Doctor Who going through my mind. That's the best way I can explain it. I don't remember any details of it, because what I know is it didn't store in my short or long-term memory. It just came and went. And I thought, well, that's weird. So the next day, same thing happened on the way home from work while I was driving. And I said to myself, I think I got a brain tumor. And so I went to my doctor, and he said, what do you think's the matter? I said, well, I think I got a brain tumor. He said, no, I think it's your heart. So we did some tests. It wasn't my heart. He thought I was throwing clots and having mini strokes on the way home from work. No, it wasn't my heart. And so I waited a little while to see if maybe it would just go away. It didn't. I got lost on the way to work one day. That's awful. It lasted about a minute, and I thought, okay, I'm going north on this road. I'll just keep going north until my memory comes back. And so I just sort of started going a little more downhill and found out what I was really doing is having seizures. It wasn't like a physical seizure. It was more like a memory seizure. I finally went in and had a CT scan and an MRI, and they did, in fact, find a tumor right behind my left eye. So if you look closely at me, please don't. I have a dent here and a swelling here, and I have a huge scar over here, so thank goodness for hair. So I went into the hospital in August of 2014. My family gathered around, and they were just so excited and upset. And I'm like, it's just brain surgery. But they didn't seem to get that. It's the funniest thing. The whole time, I never got worried. I never got scared. My neurosurgeon said, oh, Glenda, this is nothing. I've done a million of these. We'll take that little puppy out of there, and you'll be back to work in 2 weeks. And so I believed him. That's always good. It's good to go into surgery with positive attitude, right? Yeah. And so he took me into surgery. My family waited. 2 weeks later, I still wasn't awake. I had gone into a coma. Well, nurses say, I learned in nursing school, and I teach nurses this, when someone's in a coma, they often hear what's going on. I couldn't hear what's going on. I had friends come talk to me, and I would talk back to them, and I don't remember any of that. I remember nothing. It was like I just fell asleep, and the next thing I knew was I had a very strong awareness. Everything was black, dark. I had my eyes closed. I had a very strong awareness that someone was coming to get me in my hospital bed. I knew, I don't know how, but I knew I was going to have an emergency surgery. So what happened was I was 2 weeks in the coma, and my brain was swelling. Well, if your brain swells, it doesn't have anywhere to go. So they had to go in an emergency and cut out a piece of my skull to let the brain have room to swell. And I knew that. Like I said, my eyes were shut, but I knew someone came and grabbed my bed, and that's what was going to happen. I don't know how I knew that, but I knew everything that was going to happen to me from a coma state. Then, this is the fun part, then I just lifted up out of my body. And so then my eyes were open and I could see what was going on. I was hovering parallel to my body. So my body's here and like the microphone's me in the spirit. So my body's getting wheeled into the OR down the hall and I'm just hovering over it. And it was joyous. It was so cool. It was like, wow, I loved it. I didn't see a tunnel or a bright light. I saw no dead relatives. I just saw nobody. Nobody was talking to me, but I was in heaven. You know how you say, I'm in heaven? Oh, it wasn't maybe the real heaven, but I felt like I was in heaven. It was just joyful. I was very light, obviously, no body. That's pretty lightweight. I was not attached to my body. It was like I could see it there, but it just didn't seem to mean much to me. And I didn't go, oh my goodness, what am I doing out of my body? And I didn't have that thing where people often will say, oh, didn't know I looked like that. None of that. I just was really disattached. It was sort of an experience where I was completely alone. It was my own experience. I had disattached from family, from the hospital room, everything. It was just, all my awareness just came into this experience I was having, which was absolute joy. I felt fabulous, just no pain, nothing. It just felt fabulous. And so we went on down the hall, and I know that that's the hall they take people to surgery. I found that out later, that hall was the hall that I went down. And then as I arrived in the OR, I could see my body being placed. These things aren't the easiest things to describe. I could see my body on the gurney being placed, so I was face up. And then I saw what I thought was a nurse sitting right by my head. Then I just leaned over, turned, my spirit body was looking up. And then I sort of re-entered my body. And what was wonderful about that is this nurse was just... I put my head on her lap. That's what it was. That's what it felt like, and that's what I think it might have been. Of course, that doesn't make a lot of sense because I was on an OR table, an operating room table. So I just sort of went, oh, I just felt like she loved me, and she was taking care of me, just like when you put your head on your mom's lap. That's what it felt like. And then, now, this is the weird part, and I don't tell everybody this part. She began pulling black balls of energy or balls of black dark energy out of my head. She just was grabbing them and pulling them out and letting them off, grabbing them, pulling them out, and letting them off. And I thought, well, that's weird. I'm not sure this is a nurse because I don't teach my nursing students to do that. I don't. Did you, Penny? I don't think you taught me that, or Sue. Yeah, no. So, like I said, I don't share that with everyone, but I, as a holistic nurse, I do some energy work, and I really do believe that we're made of energy. We are made of energy, and maybe some of that energy is not really healthy and good for us. So she was pulling that out, and then that's all I remember. Then I woke up, was in the hospital room, and fine. So it wasn't like a big event. So, again, I didn't see anybody. I didn't talk to anybody. But it changed my life. It absolutely changed my life. I feel like, wow, who am I to have such an awesome experience? I don't know. I'm pretty awesome, but that's gone overboard. So it was just such a wonderful experience. And so what I'd like to do is just tell you a little bit about how it changed my life. So 7 months later, remember I said my neurosurgeon said I'd be back to work in 2 weeks? I never was able to go back to that in 2 weeks. I was left with a definite vision disturbance where I know you think you're just one audience, but I'm seeing two of you. I see double vision all the time, and it pulses with my brain pulse, my heartbeat. And so I've got that, and then I get dizzy quite a bit and fatigued. So I wasn't able to go back to work. I'm working part-time now, yay, and that's a big thing. So 7 months after the surgery, I was at home and finally, in March, learned to drive again. Not learned to drive again, but felt comfortable enough because the dizziness had calmed down enough that I could drive again. I still would warn you to stay off the streets when I'm driving, but that's your choice. So I just learned to, just got in the car to drive just a couple days, and when my husband, when I took him to the emergency room because he was having some urinary tract symptoms, which turned out to be bladder cancer. Starting right then, I had to drive him 4 to 5 days a week to his appointments. And that was hard because I hadn't really recovered from my own surgery yet. It was difficult. He lasted for 9 months after his diagnosis and died Christmas Eve last year. It was a peaceful death, but you're still wondering how this has changed my life. I will tell you, I'm not afraid to die. I wasn't afraid for my husband. There was not one moment during that whole 9 months where I just thought, oh, no, what's going to happen to him? I never had to think that. I knew what was going to happen to him. Two or three times he looked at me and said, Glenda, I think tonight is the night I'm going to die. He said, I think tonight's the night. And I said, good for you, honey, because you're going to love it. You are going to love it. To me, that was a gift. That was an absolute gift I was given because it could have been so horribly difficult. And I'm sure some of you in the audience have lost a loved one. But because I had been there, I knew where he was going, and it just wasn't that bad. The day he died, I put on some nice quiet music for him, and somebody rang the doorbell. And so I said, oh, here, honey, here's some quiet music for you. Interestingly, my son in Atlanta put on the same music at the same moment in time. Isn't that cool? I can't explain that one. That was cool. So I went downstairs and answered the door and talked for a few minutes to my friend, and I said, I think I need to go check on my husband. And you've guessed it. He left without me. So I'm still mad at him about that. Because I thought I'd been there, so I wanted to be with him right there at the moment. But this is really common for people who die to go when everybody leaves the room, when the family goes to lunch or something like that. So I'm not surprised. But what I noticed was when I found him, I just said, oh, honey, yay, you graduated. You went home for the holidays. It was just such a wonderful thing to have this knowledge and this experience to know that where my husband's going. So, and I can't wait to see him so he can tell me all about it. Maybe there's an IANS meeting there. No, it wouldn't be near-death experience. So that's one way it changed my life, is just I was able to get through my husband's own passing. And I hope that I helped him get through his own passing because he knew all of this. I hope he believed me and that he would be going to a wonderful, happy place. Happy, happy place. The other way it helped me was, because I am now somewhat disabled, it doesn't seem to matter so much because, oh my goodness, this is, our lives are short, and I can do this. I can do this. It's not, I might have a little suffering here, but what I know is there's a huge reward at the end. And I was talking to somebody outside, and he said, well, it's not so much being dead that's scary. It's the part that leads up to the death that's scary. And I still have a little bit of that stuff, but afraid to die, no. I'm just not afraid to die. And again, being a little disabled, big deal. I'm heading for a great place. So that's really how it's changed my life. I just really see a whole different thing. It'll be interesting to me if I have 4 children, almost 12 grandchildren. And I've wondered in my heart, what if one of them loses their lives or gets a terminal illness? Will this experience carry me through those types of things? I don't know. Life's a mystery, isn't it? It's great. That's my story. I just feel somewhat humbled by it. Like I said, I don't know why I deserved that. What I'd really like to know is your interpretation of the nurse, or that I think it was an angel, pulling the black balls of energy out of my head. I, now looking back, it took me about a year to kind of figure out my interpretation, so I'm glad Bill mentioned that we all sort of have our own interpretations to life events. And to me, I think it was an angel that was assigned to save my life that day, because she happened to be pulling this energy out of my head, and that's, my brain was swollen to the point where they had to do emergency surgery. And that's my interpretation of this woman in the OR pulling that energy out of my head. That's it. Not a long story, but it's my story, and thank you for sharing it.
Thank you for coming today and for sharing. Do you have certain religious beliefs, and how did they impact the effect that this simple yet profound experience had on you?
I do. I have religious beliefs, and I'm LDS. I'm a Mormon. It seems to gel just fine with my religious beliefs. It really does. I felt like for probably the first year after it happened, I felt really close to the other side, to the spirit. We call it the Holy Ghost in our religion, this feeling of the spirit. I felt much closer. It just all seemed more real to me. That's a good question. it went along with my religious beliefs just fine. We believe in angels, and I think there was an angel there. Can't explain everything, but it went fine. I went from believing to knowing. And I had other, what we call spiritual experiences and probably visitors from the other realm, but that don't really fit into this discussion. I felt like there was a little bit of an opening to the spirit world for a little while. Lately, not so much. Darn it. But because it's a great way to live. So yeah, probably believing to knowing. Thank you.
I'd like to go back to the moment where you had the nurse angel pulling the black energy out of your brain. You were in the operation room at that time, and the surgeons were working on you at the same time?
I think they were just not started yet. My body had just arrived in the OR, and so I just sort of settled in. And so I think they were beginning to work on me. When I say they, I think probably doing some anesthesia. I don't think they'd begun to cut at all, to cut this piece out. So it was just right when I arrived in the OR.
So did you ever have a discussion with them about that moment?
No, I never did.
Or was there ever a question from them like, oh, it wasn't as bad as we thought or anything like that?
No, I wish I had. I really wish I had. But I sort of kept it to myself for a little while, unfortunately, because I would love to have asked them, who was that nurse sitting at the head of my bed? Because I have a feeling they would have said there wasn't one.
While you were suspended above your body, was that a feeling that you would equate with being surrounded by love like many people have described it?
Definitely. Definitely, yeah. The love that I felt from that nurse angel, wow. I felt a lot of love. I didn't feel it from someone. I felt like I was love. That love was what counted in the world, and I was experiencing that right at that moment. I had pure acceptance of myself, no judgments at all. It was just so light. So I would say love. Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. Definitely.
Were the hospital personnel, were they aware that you were gone at that time?
I never asked. I don't know what I was thinking.
How many minutes do you think that you were gone from your body?
Probably 10. I would say 10. They just took me down the hall. And looking back, I don't think it was meant for me to talk to dead relatives or see spirit beings. And I was so attached to my body. I never even thought, oh, maybe I'll go to Colorado. I just stayed with my body. And so I didn't have a choice. Like a lot of people have a choice to come back. Nothing like that happened with me. It was just a little gift that I was given to kind of, here, you're dead for a minute. Let's pull you out, but you got to stay with your body. I was attached to it with some kind of physical attachment, I guess, because I just kept following it. But I was disattached emotionally from my body.
I have a question.
Yes.
So many scientists and medical professionals are absolutely convinced that NDEs are not real, that they're the product of all kinds of different things. And that now that you've had an experience and you seem quite convinced that it's real, what would you say?
I'd say, what, are you crazy? Of course it's real. I forgot I'm a scholar. I would say there's a lot of research. I would probably quote the research to them, but honestly, it was real to me. It was not a dream. It was so different than a dream that there's just no question in my mind. It was an experience. It was definitely not a dream. And there's a whole lot of research out there about how our brains get really turned off and we really shouldn't have any memories being stored during those death moments. But we do. We remember these experiences. So there's going to be skeptics in the audience. And that's great. I think the more questions we ask about it, the more interesting it will be and the more we'll know about it. But it was just absolutely real.
For a number of years, nurses have been using alternative healing practices, Reiki, hands-on healing, etc., in the beginning very quietly, and I understand it's becoming more prevalent and common. With this nurse healer that was with you during surgery, have you ever considered a message that maybe your continuous healing practices could include hands-on healing or the type of healing that she might have been doing?
Well, that's interesting because I do hands-on. I do, it's called healing touch. It's similar to Reiki, therapeutic touch. So I really do energy work, which I think is one of the reasons maybe I was given that vision of seeing her do that, because to me it wasn't that wasn't unusual to pull black balls of energy out of somebody's head. It seemed pretty normal. So it's possible because I do that kind of energy work, I'm open to seeing what I saw.
Maybe it's validation and confirmation to keep doing it. Thank you.
I'm going to take your word for that. Yeah, I like that. Thank you.
A common theme or thread I've perceived from all of the speakers that I've heard, one is that God's love for us is unconditional, and based on your experience, that is true. And the other is that we're all interconnected. I mean, we're all brothers and sisters. We're all Heavenly Father's children in His eyes. So we're all interrelated.
Yes, I agree. That's what I felt. I felt like everything was just fine. Sort of that unconditional, no judgments were in my awareness at all. Unconditional love. It was great.
Your husband passed, and do you ever feel like maybe you think he's gone elsewhere, or do you ever feel like his presence come around, or anything like that?
Yes, I do feel his presence has been there. We have a grandson that sees him and knows when he's around. It's really odd. My grandson is just turned 5, but he was 4 when my husband passed away, and he knew he was dying, and he would come and talk to us about, hey, Grandma, you know, Grandpa's going to die pretty soon, and that was kind of odd. And then sometimes when he'd be up in my bedroom, he would say, Grandma, you know, Grandpa's here right now. And I have felt his presence. I've been kind of mad at him, so I've told him to go away a few times, just to be honest. You know, marriage. So, I have felt him around. Sorry, honey. Yeah, I'll get over it. But I have felt him. I have certainly felt him.
Oh, I know another girl that had an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she developed the ability to, like, see auras and to see some kind of psychic ability. Did you have anything like that?
No, I can sort of see auras anyway already. So, no, I haven't really developed any, nothing like that. But I've sort of already kind of got that just because I do the energy work. I did get a visitor from beyond. I don't really like to share that one. Jesus Christ did visit me after, when I was recovering, after I woke up, and I was home on my couch, and he did sit with me for a while, and I've never shared this. He's just holding my hand, because I was so upset because I'd lost this vision and lost all that. Remember I told you what a good life I was having? I'm having a great life anyway, but I had lost quite a bit, quite a huge loss, and Jesus Christ actually came and sat right on the couch with me. There was a time where I said, you know, thank you for coming, but I know you got other people to take care of. And he looked at me and said, I can take care of everybody at the same time. I did have that experience, so thank you for asking. And yeah, and I know it was him. I just feel like that was a part of the whole experience of having a major surgery and surviving beautifully, really, just surviving beautifully and learning so much. So I appreciate that. Thanks for asking. And so I didn't see him with my physical eyes. I saw him with my spiritual eyes, yeah. And so I think, to me, I sort of have a vision of what he would look like. So that's probably what he looked like, yeah. The long hair and the beard and sandals, and yeah. But mostly it was love. It was just love sitting on my couch with me, telling me it's all okay, you're loved. That was awesome. My near-death experience may have opened me up to that experience.
It seems to me as though you did come back with a gift because you have been able to survive and you love your life and you feel loved and you've been able to move on. I had carbon monoxide poisoning in 2011, and a lot of the things that you've described I feel in my own brain and my own disability and abilities and what I lost of my abilities, which brought me to really feel compassion for what you must have gone through to have all these degrees and to be in a position to work with people and remember what you want to say next. And then you brought up the fact that you had this short-term memory where thoughts will come and go. I just get so distraught sometimes. I go to a neurologist. Do you go to a neurologist?
Just about once a year now.
Yeah, I've been going to a neurologist for a couple of years, like once a week, and a lot of things happen to me, and there's stages that you go through where at first it's la-la land because I went to heaven, I feel so good, and this and that. For you, I was wanting to ask you how you've been able to deal with it.
That's a great question. I sort of have a history of positive thinking. I teach my nursing students positive thinking. Stress management is my specialty, so now I have to walk my talk. So positive thinking, it's sort of ingrained in me. But even tonight, gosh, am I going to ever be negative again? Or am I denying? So I really take a lot of time for self-reflection. I really do. And I meditate twice a day, 20 minutes a day. I eat right. I exercise. I really try to take care of my body the best I can. I hear you. It's a struggle. It's a journey. I like to think life is a dance. Have you seen that TED talk about life is a dance, not a journey? I really like that. So I just keep reminding myself. But if I get down, I don't deny the downness. I embrace it so I can kind of go, oh, this is what depression feels like. This is what sadness feels like. So I don't push it away. I embrace it. And it's part of, there's a thing called neuro-linguistic programming that have any of you heard of that? NLP. So that sort of says, embrace your emotions and then let them go. Don't just keep trying to, I gotta be positive. I don't do that to myself. I don't. I just say, I am who I am.
Two-part question. A, can you draw any distinction between brain and mind and divine mind or human mind? And B, does one dimension feel more real than another dimension? Like, is what we're living now a dream or illusion and that's the real world?
The second part of your question, the first part may be over my head with a human mind, divine mind, so I might need you to say a little more about that. Whether this feels like an illusion or a dream, it did feel a little more real to be on the other side, frankly. I don't know why, though. Now that nobody's ever asked me that. It felt like I shed all of my crap, if you don't mind me saying that. And if you do, I already said it. But sorry. Embrace it and then get over it. Yeah, I feel like I shed everything and was down to my who I really am. And I rocked. I liked myself. It was like, oh, this is who I am. Yay, I like me. So, yeah, it seemed more real to me. Thank you for asking that question. See, I'm learning more than anybody tonight. So, but as far as the human mind, I don't know enough about that, I don't think. So,
thank you. Candace Pert, I believe, the research on perception coming into the field, that it wasn't the mind or that wasn't the brain that was actually perceiving, but there's a field that mind is. And then distinctive from that, some people talk about divine mind, which is a greater knowing, the intelligence of the universe.
Yeah, it reminds me of the non-local consciousness. I'm not sure I can address that. I'm going to have to think about that one. Thank you for bringing that up.
I had a question regarding your energy work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice patterns of change between negative and positive energy when you're working with people, and do you feel anything?
Yes, yeah. What I do, I do healing touch, and so I use my hands to feel their aura and their chakras. And, yeah, I can feel difference in temperature, vibrations. Usually if there's pain, I can feel where the pain is. So I definitely do, and that's why those black balls of energy were really not a surprise to me. And I felt, after a few weeks, I felt, oh, that saved my life. That absolutely saved my life. Because the idea of energy work is that illness and discomfort begin in the energy field, and then they're manifest physically. So to pull all that energy out of my head, I'm sure saved my life. Thank you.
I, like this gentleman over here, I've been coming to these IANS meetings for years. I don't remember, on and off. And it never fails that when I leave the meeting, I'm envious of the person who's had this experience. I think that because of that, I thought, well, God, it would be great to just die and come back. Yeah. And here I'm talking to somebody that flipped out of their body and had this experience. What advice would you give to us,
us poor earthlings who are having to deal with the ups and downs and all the kinds of things that happen that are good and bad and all that, what would your advice be to us as far as how to deal with it all?
I didn't realize when I was coming to these meetings, when people have a near-death experience, that means they almost died, and they usually don't feel good after that so much physically. So even today, I asked myself, was it worth it to have that near-death experience? Because that means when I came back, I'm a bit disabled. And so one piece of advice would be when you talk to somebody that's had a near-death experience, know that they're probably not fully healed. Because when you almost die, it damages you a little bit usually. It's hard to know what advice to give. I would say read the books, read those things. Read the accounts of other people's near-death experiences. Those really do happen, and you never know when it might happen to you.
How do you deal with it now? If something happens to you that's negative, what do you do?
Yeah.
Well, how do you think?
I think life is fairly short compared to the eternity, and so I can reframe what's going on, and nothing seems as important as it once was, such as giving advice to my kids, telling the grandkids to quit making a mess. Students will come and have problems, and the problems, I don't have to solve them anymore. I used to be a Mrs. Fix-It, like my daughter has a mental illness, and I always felt like I've got to fix her, I've got to do this, I've got to do that with her. It has really calmed me down to the, because I know that we're not here forever. We're somewhere forever, but not on this earth life. And so I just have reframed things to where I don't have to be in control anymore. Let's all relax and take a breath, and it's all going to be okay.
That's absolutely great. Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, thank you for your positive attitude and the love that you're showing. Secondly, was there any shape to your spiritual body? Were you conscious of your spiritual body in appearance? What did it look like, your regular body? Or
I felt it more than saw it, and I would guess it looked exactly like my physical body, but I didn't like go, oh, there's my toes. Or, well, looking back, I wish I had been more of an investigator and really looked a little closer, but I just didn't. I was just euphoric, and I would guess I looked just like I look now, only, ooh, maybe younger, yeah. I don't know. I felt young. I did, not that old is bad, but I felt very energetic and like in perfect health.
If I were to bring you a negative person that's always, always negative, how would you treat somebody?
I'm an educator. I would educate. There's a whole lot of research right now. I teach health promotion at the University of Utah College of Nursing. There's research now that shows us that negative emotions create the fight or flight response, and that creates stress, which really is bad for our health. And that negativity may in fact simply be a habit, that we develop neural pathways in our brain so that, let's say something happens, we go, oh, I'm going to react negatively, oh, I'm negative. And pretty soon we've got a nice highway that's the only choice we have. It's a habit. We can actually change that habit or that neural pathway into a positive neural pathway and just pull ourselves out of that negativity. I know I'm making it sound simple, but this is brain science, that we can just change that. I've taught my students about thought stopping, positive affirmations, because when we can think positively, we're healthier, and we think straighter, and we get better grades on tests. That wakes them up. If they come to me, I just try to educate.
Well, sorry to hear about your husband. I was wondering why you get upset with him sometimes.
Just marriage. You know, we were married 39 years. We have some unresolved issues. So I guess I'll have to talk to him next time I see him, with the mediator maybe. That's what it is. It's just marriage issues that we needed to resolve. We were so focused on his diagnosis that we just didn't get through all my list of things I wanted to resolve. Thanks.
There's always like a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, you float out of your body. When you said there's Christ right next to you, there always have to be a message. Did you feel that there was a message that you can convey?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The message was that he loved me. Now, why is it if somebody says, I love you, it seems to solve a lot of stuff? I can't explain that part, but it was very calming and relaxing to me, and that everything was going to be okay. He didn't say, oh, your vision's going to stop pulsing and your fatigue's going to go away. He didn't say that, and I don't expect that. I sort of do in my positive affirmations and my goals, but it was just, I love you, I'm watching over you. And then really, when I told him he can go now, I'd always wondered how he takes care of everybody at one time, and he just said, that's what he did. He just said, okay. I take care of everybody at once.
But, like, there's a message to us, to you, to share within society.
Yeah, and I haven't shared that experience a lot, but that would be the message, that Jesus Christ loves us, and someone's always watching over us, because if Him as just one being can take care of everybody at once, like He said, we can't explain that with our own worldly view, or He delegates it to lots of angels, so...
You said you practiced meditation. What type do you practice, and what sort of effect? Is that something you did prior as well to your experience? Yeah. What variety of meditation you practice, and what sort of impact it's had?
Yeah. My husband was diagnosed in March of 2015. In May, I realized that I needed to take care of myself. I was his caregiver. He couldn't drive. I had to do pretty much everything for him. I knew I had to take care of myself, so I started taking Tai Chi. So that helped quite a bit. So Tai Chi is a moving meditation. And then he and I together took, in August of 2015, just a few months before he passed, we took transcendental meditation classes. And so I started doing transcendental meditation, and that's why I do it 20 minutes twice a day, because TM practitioners do 20 minutes twice a day. What it's helped me is just to have a timeout. Just timeout. I just lay there and I say my mantra over and over. It's a mantra-based meditation. And so it just gives me a break twice a day. No thinking except for the mantra. It's very relaxing. So I talked about the fight or flight syndrome a minute ago. It really elicits and brings forth the relaxation response. It's very healthy. The other thing for me is if I don't do the afternoon meditation, the fatigue somewhat overwhelms me. So I always have to meditate for sure that second time in the afternoon. Otherwise, I'm sitting watching TV. I've watched so much TV the last couple of years. Love it. So I do transcendental meditation. However, I will tell you, too, that I've been teaching my nursing students. We do at the first 10 minutes of every class we do, I teach them to meditate. And I can't teach them TM, so I teach them mindfulness-based meditation, music-based meditation, all kinds of affirmation-based, all kinds of meditation. So I've kind of, even though I basically do TM, I also do mindfulness-based or whatever. Right now I'm doing a remembered wellness meditation, where I just meditate on how I used to be before I had the brain tumor. That is related to the placebo effect. I've done some reading on that. So if we remember how we used to be, it sort of retrains our brains to understand that we can be there again. And so it kind of tells our brain, oh, I'm actually well. I'm not sick. I'm well. And so it's pretty powerful, and I've just started doing that about a week ago. So it's great being an educator, because when I teach them, I got to do it. So so I've learned a lot.
Sounds like that you have this gift, if you want to call it, to see auras before this experience, but it was enhanced.
I would say no. And part of it is simply that I don't do a lot. I don't focus on my energy work. It's sort of a hobby. I think if I focused on it more, I might have noticed that I can do a little more. But no, I would say no. That wasn't a gift I was given.
Glenda, all of the years I've known you, you've always been so positive and upbeat. And it sounds like your near-death experience carried through being positive and upbeat, and an experience that you enjoyed and cherish. And I've been sitting here thinking, I wonder if we don't create our own life and death experience continuing on, just like in our own lives we create what is around us. If we allow toxicity around us, do we let it permeate us, or do we get away from it? But I wonder if your positive death isn't just a reflection of your positive life, and maybe that's the message you're supposed to share with people, is to drop the negativity.
Yeah, drop the negativity. Thank you, Penny. I appreciate that. You got me thinking now. As usual, my professor's back there get me thinking.
Many people who have or experience a coma, have a near-death experience during that period, and it sounds like you had an extensive coma, and you don't remember much during that. Do you ever have flashbacks of other things that you may have experienced during that time?
No, I wish, because I'm thinking, 2 weeks, what else do I have to do but maybe visit my dead relatives? Come on. But no, nothing. Have you ever been under anesthetic? They sort of put you under, the next thing you know, you wake up. It was sort of like that. I didn't notice that the 2 weeks went by. I was shocked when my kids told me, oh, you've been gone for 2 weeks. Really? I thought it was just yesterday I had the surgery. So I wish, I would love to have had a bigger experience.
You mentioned the music that you'd put on for you and your husband and then your son. Yeah. Could you tell us what that music was?
It was piano. He died, and so I left it in the CD player. I know where the CD player is, and it's got it in there, so that's been almost a year. So it was piano music. Somewhere in Time was, yeah, it was from that movie, Somewhere in Time.
We've got a couple of extra minutes, and then we can conclude. One thing that I think we all struggle with at times is faith. Faith is not something where you can go, I'm running short of faith, so I think I'll go down and get $20 worth of faith. And what happens with a near-death experience is that unequivocally it answers that question of faith. You'll find that anybody that has had an experience is that there is no doubt in their mind. There's a strong basis of faith. And I know in my case that was something that I always struggled with, even though I had a good foundation through family of religion and things like that. It was always something elusive. What does faith really mean? And the thing that I found kind of interesting is that prior to my experience is that at the times you think that you would have the most faith, I found that was the time I questioned it the most. Through the death of my father and losing some people that were very close to me, it's like, what does this really mean? Is there more to it? And then after having the experience, there was no doubt after that. The questions have been answered. That's the one thing. And the other thing is, you were talking about the black balls. And I think that oftentimes, even though there are common threads that bind all experiences, the experience itself is very individual in nature. And I know that sounds a little confusing. There are common elements, but the experience is very individual in nature. And oftentimes, I believe that the experience is tailored to the individual to answer a question or to validate an aspect of life. And I think that's probably what happens.
Yeah, it almost seemed like it was tailored for me. I just needed to feel that joy and that little small experience. I don't know exactly why, but yeah, it just seemed like that was something that would happen to me.
Right. Dave's question about the coma. I had an extensive coma myself. With the exception of the near-death experience, literally it was like my life ceased when I went into the coma, and it resumed when I came out of it, and there was nothing in between. And for a long period of time, I tried to fill in those gaps with medical personnel, with family, with friends, and really there was nothing. There was just this void that just didn't exist, and it was kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I asked my kids just last week what happened when I was in the coma, and they said they actually talked to me. I responded sometimes. I sang songs. I cried out for my mother, and that broke their heart. They said that was really hard because I'd go, Mommy, like that. I have no memory of any of that. I had a friend that visited me for 2 or 3 hours in the hospital, and we talked. Nope, I don't know what we talked about. So for me, it's kind of nice to know that even, because I know that if I have a friend or relative in a coma, if they have the same experience I had, it's not so bad. And when I came out, my stitches were almost healed. So I didn't have to go through the pain of the stitches and stuff.
When your friends would come in, your family, and talk to you, and you'd talk back, did they feel like you were there? And this isn't really relating to your near-death experience, but it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I asked them that exact question. I said, did you think I was there or not there? And they said, sometimes we felt like you were there, but then it would fade away. I wasn't there. Trust me. I was not there.
And you know what's interesting? When oftentimes when people do have a near-death experience during a coma, they may or may not remember it right away, but when they remember it, it's very real and more real than this life, typically, or commonly.
We have a number of physicians that attend on a regular basis, and I had a discussion with one of his name is Ed. I just really, for definition's sake, I said, how can you basically define a near-death experience from other medical experiences? And he said, well, kind of a simplistic way of looking at it is, he said, Ed's an anesthesiologist. He had literally thousands of experiences where people had had events that many were near-death experiences. But he said, a simple way to look at it is, he said, hallucinations are disjointed. They're going to be all over the map. A dream is something that will fade. You may be able to retain bits and pieces of it. A near-death experience remains pristine regardless of how long it's been. When I first became affiliated with IONS, a gentleman passed many, many years ago. He was in his 80s when we first started meeting. And he had had an experience when he was 5 years old. In a drowning incident. And he said, it's as clear today as the day it happened. And I think that's the thing. The two elements of a near-death experience are, one, it does not fade, it remains pristine, and the second part of it is, it's life-changing. No other event, hallucination, or dream really changes a person's life. The near-death experience does.
Thank you. Just to add, the thing I was going to say was, when you have a near-death experience, it's very vivid and you remember it, like he was saying. And skeptics say, well, it's just chemicals. But then when you're in a coma and your body's responding, kind of, and you have no memory, you were not there, it's a totally different experience. It's very fascinating.
Right. And the thing is I really embrace skepticism. I know that sounds strange, but the thing is if we just accept it on its face value, the research stops at that point. People don't look at it whether they're investigating it spiritually, emotionally, or medically. But with skepticism, it furthers the research to where people really do start to take a very serious look at it. For those of you that were able to come to Eben Alexander's presentation, I was really fortunate that I was able to spend several hours with him and kind of talk to him about it from a medical perspective. And I asked him, I said, well, how did your colleagues really accept what happened to you? And he said, some were skeptics, he said, but most really embraced it. And he said, now they're really looking at it from a scientific perspective in their practices, which is really good.
It really is. And I'd like to, just in case anybody's thinking I had a dream, I actually do a lot of dream work. My husband and I used to run a little group where we would look at dreams. There's the International Association for the Study of Dreams. So I know a dream is my point. I have a lot of background in studying dreams.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if you have further questions and comments, she'll be here for a few moments or minutes.